Why, yes, it is a Thursday. Time to talk to the voice of the Kansas Jayhawks, Brian Haney, brought to you as always by Anderson Insurance Agency there in Beloit. Brian, my friend, how you doing today?
Doing well, Wade. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm excited about what's coming up. We got some high school basketball going to be covering today, tomorrow, and Saturday. We got wrestling tournaments. We've got KU on Saturday, the Chiefs and AFC title game on Sunday. I know we're not back to normal, whatever that really was, because it seems like it's been forever since we had that before COVID-19. But at least for the moment, I'm feeling like that's a little bit more what we're used to here in our area, is having sports left and right.
That's great to hear, no doubt. It's an exciting time of year when you've got it on all levels and all happening at once. And, you know, the Big 12, it's kind of getting shut down left and right.
Yeah.
With, 40% of our weekend schedule is already off. You're only going to have six teams playing. So hopefully, you know, Kansas can dodge that bullet next Tuesday with their scheduled game with TCU. That one's actually in question. Obviously, we lost the chance to play last Saturday versus Iowa State. But Bill Self mentioned that if these postponements continue, it's going to get to a point where in the last few weeks you're playing Thursday, Saturday, and then maybe like a Monday, Tuesday type scenario as well, where you have three games in a week. Yeah. So it's looking a little dicey on that front, but I'm glad to hear the local calendar there in Glen Elder and Beloit's looking good for you guys.
Yeah, but of course, as we know, that can change on a dime, but we're crossing our fingers, and we still have some teams in our area that haven't played very many games and have been kind of, I don't want to say cursed, but they've, whether they have quarantines or everybody they tend to play has to be in a quarantine, like our Lakeside teams. It's been, you know, obviously very frustrating for them. The K-State women, I know yesterday played their first game in 30 days. The KU women have had to deal with this, of course, in-house, and now the KU men's basketball team dealing with it, as you said, with the Saturday game postponed against Iowa State. And they did play, of course, though, on Monday, Big Monday. KU's run of 18 consecutive wins on Big Monday ended with a loss at Waco against the Bears. The Bears get it done 77-69. You know, this game was interesting to me because, one, I didn't like KU's chances going in because I felt like Baylor, this is a chance to really prove that we are legitimately a top, you know, one or two team, and we are the best team in the Big 12. But having said that, they jumped out on KU early, and it could have easily snowballed, but I thought Christian Brown kept them in it. And at the end of the day, I heard Bill Self say afterwards, we competed really hard, played hard, played pretty well in the second half, but too big a hole to climb out of. But, you know, Brown and Abaji kind of kept KU in it, and Jared Butler was phenomenal. And it was an interesting game. And somehow, when it was 65-60, I think, you just kind of, anybody that watched the game would have thought Baylor was in control the whole time, and yet KU had a chance there towards the end.
Yeah, they sure did. And it was a much more upbeat Bill Self than probably most expected to hear in the post game. But when you go back and look at it, he's right. On two occasions, you were within two possessions at 5 points down, and you start to add up the missed opportunities when you get in a game that's that close. And whether it was a missed dunk by DeJuan Harris or a missed layup by Christian Brown or a couple of the calls that didn't go their way, suddenly it kind of starts to add up. And usually Kansas is not a team that's playing the what-if game, right? Usually we're the team to beat and we're finding ways to eke them out. But this is definitely a matchup where I think we saw a clear line of separation between Baylor at the top of the league, Texas nipping at their heels, and then Kansas. And this was KU's chance to prove that they belong in that upper category. And so I think Coach Self walked away actually encouraged that they were able to bring it back as closely as they were, even on a night when Butler was unconscious. And, you know, you go back to Butler's previous game, he was 0 for his first nine versus Texas Tech. So sometimes it's all about when you catch a certain team. But Kansas clearly has to do a better job of getting out the gate in a much better spot. I mean, we've seen them fall behind in some of these losses to Gonzaga and Baylor and Oklahoma State and Texas, where they've really stumbled out of the blocks, and it's just too big of a mountain to climb, as you said. Now, the fact that they got it back as close as they did, and the fact that versus Oklahoma State they came back to take a lead, certainly is encouraging, but just imagine if they actually played from out front like they normally do, you know, how much better it can look. And so I think Coach walked away with plenty of things to point to with his team that were both positive but also constructive things that they needed to fix up. And because of that, I fully expect to see an inspired effort on Saturday versus Oklahoma. And And let's keep in mind, you know, it's easy to start to get down on these guys when you lose back-to-back games in league play for the first time in 8 years. But we haven't played the portion of our schedule yet where things open up a little bit and you can get on a little bit of a win streak. And we won't name names, but those teams we haven't played yet where you haven't had a chance to kind of, you know, puff your chest out a little bit, because for KU, their first five or six games were all ranked teams or teams receiving votes. So that obviously is not the case on Saturday. Oklahoma's very good, and they'll have Brady Manick in this one. They did not have him in the first meeting, and we barely beat him without Manick, so that's going to be tough. But from there, I still think this is a team that wins 12 or 13 league games, probably 12, and has a chance to be a three or a four seed in the NCAA tournament, which most schools would take that any given year and think that that was a sensational campaign. You know, we at Kansas obviously are so spoiled with 8-1 seeds in the last 12 tournaments, and it would have been 9-13 tourneys had we had a bracket last year. So just for KU fans listening today, be patient. Know that it's a young team, and know that they're not far off. They're just still evolving, and obviously, as we'll get into in a second, there's some guys that have been a little bit up and down right now that you need to be able to lean on more. And that's probably had a lot to do with it.
Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, brought to you each and every Thursday here on The Ticket by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky at 118 North Bill and Beloit, or call them at 738-5701. For KU to have any chance to win the Big 12, you really needed to win in Waco against Baylor the other night. And based on what you just said a moment ago, are we saying that KU's waving the white flag? I know Bill Self isn't, but are we saying realistically that KU's waving the flag as to, hey, we're not winning the Big 12 this year when you're 4-3 and you're really, in essence, four games behind Baylor because they've got the head-to-head right now too?
Well, no flags would be waved of any color unless it's crimson and blue, right? You know, we're not going to do that just yet. But I think what makes it even more challenging is the fact that we just don't know if it's going to be ultimately a 16 or 17 game slate, or if we'll get all 18 in. With that uncertainty, to be three games back in the loss column, and keep in mind, you know, KU missed the chance to play Iowa State. Baylor has had Texas and West Virginia postponed, so it's been a little different on what games that they might not get made up. And we expect that they'll get at least one of those made up. But until we know for sure how long the road is in front of these teams, you can't be too bullish in your predictions of KU charging back in the race, because there may be fewer bullets left in the gun to take down the Bears. So I think at this point, obviously, it's looking like a very, very daunting task, but not impossible. However, as Bill Self said, and this is a couple of weeks ago now, but he said, we got so ingrained as a fan base and a basketball program with these consecutive Big 12 titles, 14 of them, an all-time record, to where almost in our psyche, like, you had to first complete that step in order to have a great year. He said, hey, really what folks historically will remember you by is postseason run. He's like, we still have a chance to grow and evolve as a team over the next 6 weeks and have a really great showing in the NCAA tournament, have a heck of a season, or even in the regular season, still finish with 20-some wins. I stop short of saying 25 because I know the schedule's going to be shorter, but the point is, still have a chance to have a great year in that regard and look back on it and be really proud of what we accomplished. It just might not include a conference championship, but because we had them every year for a decade and a half, and kids like Noah didn't know what it was like to grow up without Kansas as a Big 12 champion for a while, that's the spoiled fan base that we are, and we got to realize that for most schools, look at the ACC, for example, there's so many great schools out there that, it's not every year that Duke or Carolina wins it. In fact, it's probably once every 5 years that they do. And fans don't care about that. They care about what you do in March. And so there's still a great chance to have a very memorable and very successful season for this Kansas team, even if that particular line item on the resume isn't there. But to your point, it's not looking good. I put the odds at less than 10% just based on number of games and all that. But we're certainly not waving any white flags just yet. Because you know what? We have the best coach in the league, and it's not close. And until we don't, I'll always hold out hope that Kansas is going to find a way to do something really, really special. And that really, really special this season just might happen to be in March, not January, February.
Well, and that's okay. That's okay. You know, we've talked about all the times KU's been so good in all the number one seeds. You know, how many championships does KU have to show for it? How many Final Fours? And, you know, that was something I remember when Frank Martin was at Kansas State, is that Frank Martin really focused more on March than he did on winning a conference championship, and some people didn't like that. And then there are other people saying, well, you know, that's kind of how you, in essence, get judged on getting contract extensions. I mean, conference championships don't hurt, but at the end of the day, it's usually, you know, what did you do in the tournament? You did well, you're at the top half of your conference, but then you flamed out four straight years in the first weekend of the tournament. That you are judged on what you do at the end. You know, the 1997 Kansas team was the best team I've ever seen at Kansas. And that team was, automatic as anybody to win a national championship. And they went 34-2, you know that. And they lost to Arizona, who went on to win the national championship. And that team still judged by the fact they didn't win at all, even though they were the best team in America. And had they played a best out of five, a best out of seven, there's no doubt in my mind they would have won it all. But at the end of the day, you were judged not on winning a conference title that year. You were judged on what you did in March, right?
Yep, absolutely were. And
it's unfair.
Scott Pollard, who's a good friend of mine, it haunts him to this day.
Oh, I bet.
They didn't have a chance to at least go to a Final Four. I think we've gotten to the point as a basketball fan base and culture where we realize that making a Final Four is kind of like a championship in and of itself. No, it's not a national championship, but it's individual banner worthy. It's like making it to the Rose Bowl or the Sugar Bowl, but not, you know, winning it all in college football. It's just so stinking tough, to get there in the first place, to be in the field of 68. But then to win a region like that when, you know, your Sweet 16 and Elite Eight opponents are all typically top 12, top 8 type teams. We've gotten to a point now where at Kansas, and I know we've only had three Final Fours in the Bill Self era, but Final Four should be looked upon as a secondary level championship, and I don't think we always thought that way. But when you start to see the really good teams like the 97 example you gave, or 2017 for Kansas when we had Frank Mason, the National Player of the Year, Josh Jackson, the number four pick in the draft, you know, and they finish one step short of it, you realize just how tough it is to even get there. And so I think that hopefully as we start to look back on it, there's greater appreciation for the teams that made it, but also teams that had incredible 25 and 30 win seasons but came up just a step short, because it really is, in this day and age of so much parity in college basketball, so stinking tough to make it that far.
It is, no doubt. You were talking about some of the younger players. Let's talk about one that's not playing. Give us an update on Bryce Thompson. Of course, he had surgery. You feel for him because, you know, he had the back, and then all he comes back, and then the finger, and the hand injury, the finger on his right hand. What do we know about Bryce Thompson, the freshman?
Well, it's going to be still somewhere in that 4 to 6 week range. Initially, the timetable was 1 month to 7 weeks, and sounds like he's in great spirits, and you know they're going to be very cautious in bringing him back. But his mindset all along is to be back and impact this team before it's all said and done. Now, previous players in spots like this, like Jalen Wilson a season ago, for example, you would say, well, man, if he comes back in mid to late February, how much of the rotation is already set? Realistically, you know, can he crack the lineup and all that? I think with this Kansas team, he can. And I think that he's going to be doing other things to stay in great game shape, since it's a finger and not a knee or an ankle, to where, you know, he could jump back in and still impact this team. And, you know, as we've seen with some of the ball handling struggles of Marcus Garrett and the fact that DeJuan Harris has played so much alongside him, they need another capable guard back there that's not a wing, because right now they're having to guard some of these quicker, smaller backcourts like Oklahoma State and Baylor with guys that are 6'7 and 6'8. Because those are their best players, and that's what they have the most of right now. But not that Bryce is super fast or anything, but built a little bit more where he could jump into that mix of capable guys at the guard position on the perimeter for you. And so I still think there's hope he impacts this team before the season's done. But you look at the calendar, and realistically, it might happen in the last week of February, and there's not a whole lot of time left. But when you start to consider all these games that are getting postponed and the fact that, as I alluded to earlier, in your last 2 weeks, you might have some weeks where you're playing three games in one particular week, I think he's got a great shot to still get in, you know, five, six games, depending on how the schedule falls. And he's going to approach it mentally as such. He's had great spirits and a great attitude throughout. I think a lot of kids with the setbacks that you just alluded to, first the back injury, then the finger, they would say, woe is me, and their attitude would be bad. But he comes from great stock. His father played for Bill at Tulsa. And, you know, the family was right there in Stillwater, since he's from Tulsa, when the injury happened. And he's had great support throughout. So he's got his head screwed on straight. He's got great, you know, medical support here at Kansas. And I would not count out Bryce Thompson and still impacting this roster this season. It's just not at all what any of us would have forecast. I think back in August, if you asked me, I'd say, well, he may not start, but, I mean, this is a guy that's going to give you probably 10 points off the bench each game, because there was just so many great reviews of this five-star McDonald's All-American. And he was slower out of the gate than we probably figured, and part of that had to do with the fact that he didn't get the preseason that most collegians get based on the pandemic. But then to have two injuries back-to-back like this, that's just a really unfair hand. And I have such high hopes for him, because, to quote Bill Self, and we talked about this on Hawk Talk on Tuesday, I was asking him about the all-personality team of his 18 years, who would be the starting five greatest personalities. And he said, you know, on our current team, it might be Bryce. He's that type of kid. And so he's going to persevere through this, and he's going to be better for it. But don't count him out. I think he still makes some big plays down the stretch.
You know, you were talking about the youth of this basketball team, and it is interesting. This certainly isn't anything like Kentucky. I mean, Kansas has Marcus Garrett back. Abaji's played for a while. It seems like he's been there a long, long time. Of course, he had to, you know, come out his freshman year and play that second semester. McCormick has played, although maybe, you know, obviously a bigger role this year. We know that, but he's played in the past in some big moments. And, you know, Mitch Lightfoot, of course, you know, obviously he chose to redshirt last year. And so he's had experience as well. Are you meaning when you're talking, and Christian Brown played, you know, quite a bit last year too. When you're talking youth, are you speaking of a particular player or two in mind that you, when you're talking about them developing and getting better and there's brighter days ahead?
I think that, you know, as you pointed out, with Marcus, David, and Ochai, we have more veteran presence than some teams have, certainly. Like, to me, I thought our veterans should have made a bigger difference in the Oklahoma State game than what they did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was actually a veteran, Marcus Garrett, that kind of let us down late, which Self has said since has a lot more to do with fatigue than anything right now for him. But when you look at the other guys on the roster that we're leaning on for shots, minutes, all that, still pretty freaking young, okay? So Jalen Wilson played two games last year. He's absolutely a redshirt freshman.
Yeah.
Of the purest variety. And I'm not saying he's hit a rookie wall with back-to-back four-point games. If anything, he's hit what it feels like to be the most marked man on the roster, and opponent defenses are now being designed to try to take him away. In Christian Brown's case, yeah, he's a sophomore, but he really didn't get it going in terms of significant minutes until the second half of last year.
Right.
Still a 19-year-old kid, and we're asking him down 10 at number 2 to take all the big shots. All right, and then, you know, you keep on going down the list from there. You know, DeJuan Harris played 20 minutes the other night. Again, redshirt freshman, but really like a true freshman. He didn't even practice with the team until the second semester a year ago. Zero games last season for him. Tristan Inaruna, a sophomore, he's had kind of a slow start, but he's now starting to see the light come on a little bit. Self had a great anecdote on him and that on Hawk Talk if you want to go back and listen. And so, you know, beyond those three of Garrett, Abaji, and McCormick, who are senior, junior, junior, everybody else handling the rock, everybody else taking a big shot is a sophomore or younger, and in many cases, they're inexperienced sophomores in the grand scheme of it. And so, you know, to me, it's a very young team compared to Baylor, who, you know, senior, senior, junior, junior, and most of their kids are fourth-year juniors or something where there was a transfer year in there as well. That should get you excited as a Kansas fan, that if they keep this group together, you know, we're going to really see something special next season. But yeah, I that's not to make excuses at all.
Right.
It's just a reality that, you know, when we were getting buried in the first half on Monday, the kid that was shooting us out of it, that was being asked to take all the big shots. You know, he's played in 35 career games. So, you know, let's realize how young they are at certain key spots right now for Kansas. But also point out that a guy that's not young needs to be doing better for you, and that's Marcus Garrett. And you know, Self's talked about how he's a little bit out of position and probably a little bit fatigued. But I think Marcus would tell you, you know, he can bring it a lot more consistently and take care of the ball. And, you know, I don't know if we have time to dive into everything that's going on at that spot right now. But he'll be better. And he may not be what he was last year because he's better in a complementary role, not an offensive facilitator role. But he still is, you know, one of the best on-ball defenders we've had in 20 years at KU basketball, maybe the best. He's just got a lot on his plate right now, and I think that's led to some in-game breakdowns that are not Marcus Garrett typical. And they're trying to get him more help with ball handling, with Harris playing more, but as Self alluded to, when you got those two on the floor together, opponent defenses don't have to respect either of them on the three, which means they can sag off and really make it tougher, whether it's Brown, Abaji, or Wilson on the catch. You know, they're right there with pressure all around them because you can sag off the other two. And so this team, in order to get Garrett more help handling the ball, has to take one of those other three options off the floor for starters, and then the other two have more defensive pressure on them because you got two non-shooters in there. And it really starts to force your hand into playing Garrett at the point by himself.
Yep.
And just hope he gets better, even though that's not his gift.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, for Marcus, I think the frustrating thing watching him is that he gets to the hoop, but then it takes a little while to navigate, get to the hoop, and a lot of times he's not able to finish or he gets his shot blocked. If he could develop that little teardrop or floater, you know, kind of as he's going in, could be more effective. But he's never really been known as a offensive weapon per se. He can score at times, we know. He's worked on his shot, but he is a defensive stopper. He's a leader, no doubt. And maybe that's the case. Maybe there is too much on his plate. I'm sure he'd be the first to say that's not the case. Whether he's being honest with you or not, I don't know, because, you know, you're trying to be a leader. You're going to say what you need to say to lead the guys. But when you do look at this Kansas team, I think when I ask that question, you know, Wilson immediately comes to mind as a young guy. And he didn't play very well the other night against Baylor. Harris, obviously, is a young guy. And Aruna's a young guy. I think what happens is, and then, of course, Lightfoot's a veteran, but I think what happens is people forget that Christian Brown's 19. Like, I think there are a lot of people, including myself, have to stop and remember that Christian Brown is 19. And I think the whole, it's been so long since we played in regards to last year, the tournament got wiped out, and it feels like it's been, you know, 2.5 years over the last 9 months. You almost feel like Christian Brown's a junior, but he's not. And that's really good information he threw out there, that he's only 19 years of age, and you're relying on him to take some really big shots, especially if Abaji's struggling or Garrett's struggling, or in this case, Wilson the other night wasn't really an offensive factor.
Yeah, it's a lot to ask of such a young kid, and Jalen, you know, to be a guy that now is being headhunted by opponent scouting reports, and in his case, you know, what's he played, 16 career games?
Yeah.
You know, so that's a lot to ask of these guys, but they're going to be better for it going through that gauntlet and that refining fire of really being marked men at such a young age. It'll make them so much more savvy and confident as upperclassmen, and I'm excited to see what Jalen and Christian and maybe Ochai as a senior, should he come back, looks like on the perimeter next year. This is a Kansas team that if they stay together and add in the pieces they're expecting to, will absolutely be preseason top five, only this time in a much better position to back it up.
All right, time for an off-the-wall question. By the way, KU will be at OU, we hope, coming up on Saturday, pregame at 10:30 on Z96.3 Lake, your home for the Jayhawks in North Central Kansas. So, Patrick Mahomes, I was watching this game the other day. I didn't think he really had a concussion. I talked about a chokehold, and then they've talked about reports coming out that it's a bit of a nerve issue that caused him to kind of go limp there as he tried to stagger and stand up, and it looked really bad, the optics of it all. And that took me back to an experience I had in our cafeteria back at Trigo Waukini Grade School, whatever it was, out in Trigo County when I was growing up. And that was that the lunchroom lady, who was also one of our teachers, Mrs. Forbridges, when we would be goofing off, or of course I was an innocent bystander, I did nothing wrong, I was just, you know, part of a bad group, apparently, sitting at the tables in the big cafeteria. When something would go down and something would be happening and Mrs. Fabricius wasn't happy with us guys and what we were doing, and I don't remember what we did, she would come over, and she can't do this anymore. She would get fired on the spot. She'd come over and she would literally, she would pinch right there, that nerve right around out to the right of your neck, right there on the shoulder blade, you know, kind of between the shoulder blade or right above the shoulder blade and the collarbone. She would pinch that nerve and your right side would go limp. It would. You're like, okay, I'm not messing with Mrs. Fabricius. She knows how to deal with this. Now, she can't do that today, obviously. So my question is, the off the wall, describe a unique or odd or weird lunchroom or cafeteria experience that you've had in your life.
Wow, that's funny. Man.
You ever get in a food fight? Did you ever get in a food fight?
Yeah, I have, actually.
Okay.
I was in a food, it wasn't in a locker room, though. It was in a community shelter, like you could rent, that's not the right term. You rent, like, at a park, like a little, I don't even know what you call it.
Like a shelter house or something?
Shelter house thing, yeah, basically. Mm-hmm. And it was a Halloween party, and we all had costumes on. And this is fitting for Inauguration Day yesterday, because I was dressed up as George Bush. I had a George Bush mask and a sweatshirt that said "Read My Lips, No New Taxes," which was obviously the big slogan that year in the campaign. And food fight broke out, and I just went nuts. I was whipping fastballs like I was Roger Clemens. I was, whether it was a dinner roll or whatever it was, anything I could get my hands on, I wasn't just chucking it. I was humming it in there like it was nobody's business. And I got singled out amongst the pack when they broke up the food fight, and they made me stand in front of the entire party for like 10 minutes. Wow, everybody got admonished, and I had to stand up in front of everybody because I was like the ringleader. And yet, of all the times to be embarrassed by having to stand out and be, publicly disciplined, I had a mask on, so I could kind of hide behind the mask. It wasn't nearly as embarrassing as it might have been. You couldn't see the pain and anguish on my face or that single tear rolling down my left cheek because I had the George Bush mask. So there's your story. I was probably 8 years old when it happened, but still had a killer Randy Johnson fastball on a dinner roll.
Read my lips. There will be no more food fights. I, Brian Haney, do hereby swear in front of all of you with a George Bush mask on. I love it. Exactly. I love it. That's eight. You were eight, so that took you back a little ways. I love it.
It did. Yeah.
Very cool. I know one thing. I always like the dinner rolls to be, easy to eat. But if you're in a food fight, you want those things to be brick hard, man, because then they can really, really fly.
Yep, exactly.
Hey, man, have a good call. Hopefully everything will turn out okay to where you'll have a call coming up on Saturday at OU. And then, of course, against TCU on Tuesday. We'll talk to you next week. Safe travels, my friend.
Sounds good, buddy. Thanks so much.
Take care. Brian Haney, the voice of Jayhawks, the best. Brought to you, as always, by Anderson Insurance Agency. They do farm, home, auto, life, and crop insurance. Stop by and see Matt and Becky, 118 North Millen, Beloit, or call them at 738-5701.